I'd been teaching Pilates for maybe 2.5 years. And to him, it was like the logical next step was to own a business. And for me, I had imposter syndrome. I still felt very new and like I wasn't, you know, good enough to be doing something like that.
Hi, I'm Janice Peterson. Welcome to The Company You Keep. Time to limber up, folks, because in this episode, we meet the founder of a fitness enterprise offering something a little different amidst a crowded market. Good Times Pilates offers what its founder refers to as a no BS approach to Pilates. I speak to founder Kat Webb, who's had to bend and stretch her way around more than a few small business curveballs. We'll cover what it takes to start your own fitness business, how to build a client base physically and remotely, and when and what to outsource. This chat might be just what you need to hear to get your business in tip-top shape. Kat Webb from Good Time Pilates, thanks so much for joining us here on The Company You Keep.
Thank you so much for having me.
An absolute pleasure. I'm very keen to know what sparked your love of Pilates. Kat, is this something you've been following and pursuing for a long time?
Actually, not that long. I began my Pilates journey at 27 when I took my first Pilates class. And prior to that, I really wasn't into fitness. I was in the fashion industry, but I was not at all into wellness or well-being, or I didn't really have a regular exercise regime at all. And I took my first class because some friends told me to come along, and something kind of went wow inside my head. And I felt like I'd finally found something that I didn't hate, which was great, but also something that kind of, I was so intrigued and so interested, and I became quite obsessed quite quickly. So over that year, I pretty much did like a class every single day and had a transformative experience in my outlook on life, my lifestyle, my well-being, my physical and mental health. That was kind of the biggest transformation. And then in experiencing that huge change, I became really passionate about wanting to facilitate that for others as well.
It's a big, big step though, isn't it? Having an interest in something like Pilates to starting your own business. Did you have much business experience prior to starting Good Times Pilates?
I did work in retail, but I also, prior to that, also worked in account management for like wholesale management for about 5 years. So I kind of had business experience in that I'd seen it through that. I understood how to do, you know, spreadsheets and all the boring stuff to me. The number stuff to me is not my main interest, but I kind of understood how it worked and how important it was. But my parents have owned and ran their own business for the last, like, my whole life. So owning a business was something like, it didn't automatically to me make sense, but to them made so much sense. I'd started a diploma of business majoring in PR, and that really helped me kind of get a few business skills. You know, you collect kind of skills along the way and realize that, oh, I'm interested in that. But I think working in fashion in the wholesale sector, I had to do a monthly, you know, SWOT report. I did a lot of research and development. Yeah, so there are definitely skills that I picked up along the way, but I don't have a business degree per se.
And I'm guessing you must have called on the support of your parents as well. They would have had some great insights into running a business.
It was actually my dad's idea to start a business. I was living with them at the time and I'd been teaching Pilates for maybe 2.5 years. And to him, it was like the logical next step was to own a business. And for me, I mean, I had imposter syndrome. I still felt very new and like I wasn't, you know, good enough to be doing something like that. His version was like, well, why wouldn't you do this? And from there, it took me a year with a lot of help from my parents to help find a location. I had no idea about lease agreements and council permits and even, you know, setting up a website. And I kind of learned all of that on the fly and asked a lot of people advice at the time. I'm very lucky. One of my good friends had opened her own studio before. So I had someone to like ask all those questions to.
When did you decide then to open your own business?
Well, after teaching full-time for about 3 years, I really saw a gap in the market, and it was almost like I'm my own kind of aspirational client. So I wanted something different from the industry. And I think not having the prior experience in the fitness industry almost allowed me to see it from fresh eyes and see that there was sometimes a lot of language and communications that are used to inspire people through shame and through making them feel like they're less than something. And so I wanted something more than that. I wanted to empower people. The name kind of says it all. I wanted it to be, you know, fun, and I wanted to build a place where you could be welcome and be yourself. And yeah, that was kind of my real deciding factor, was that there was no studio that I wanted to go to in Melbourne that felt like a community. So I wanted to build that.
Subscribe to The Company You Keep on your favourite podcast app. And then in terms of the actual space you ended up using, what were you looking for there, and what was the process like to find the right space?
It definitely took a long time. I really, really wanted somewhere that was accessible, but unfortunately, inner city Melbourne, it's harder to get accessible sites, and especially considering that I had no money. So I was looking with my parents. My dad actually and my mum helped me a lot to try and find the right space. We knew that it needed to be around 100 square metres to fit the machines in. I had a really limited budget, which I lived at home, so I was able to save up a bit of money and with the help of my parents find somewhere that it had to be kind of a blank canvas, you know, had to have the bathroom. But apart from that, we built it all ourselves, and my dad's favours and friends helping. He was like, I've got a glass guy. I've got a guy who could do the floors. So, I mean, I couldn't have built any of that without his help. But yeah, and I also wanted it to be somewhere that was north side. So I only live around the corner from the studio. But to me, the community that is around Fitzroy is very open-minded and inclusive kind of in as a general sense. So I wanted to support that community, and I knew that they would understand where I was coming from and be appreciative of what we do.
Even though I'm in a different state to you, Kat, driving around, there are no shortage of Pilates studios, right? I'm sure it's similar in Melbourne. So what makes your studio different to other Pilates studios out there?
We think about the things that we say and how they're going to affect people, or how they could potentially affect people. We want people to feel good about themselves, full stop. And we do everything that we can to make them feel good. I am a very attention to detail person. So you come into the studio and it's about the whole experience. So teaching and learning and moving is only one part of it. I studied interior design as well, like back when I was like 20.
Okay.
So aesthetics have always been really important to me. And I understood, having gone to so many different studios, I understood the importance of aesthetics and experience. And I wanted to bring almost that like hospitality experience into the Pilates studio. So we have a signature scent that I created, and we also have candles that I'm now selling, which was like a COVID kind of thing to allow people to have a part of the studio at home. Everything that in the studio I built or I found or is made by a local designer. We have artwork on the walls from local artists. I wanted to create the full experience.
And it sounds like it's something that really awakens all of the senses.
I hope so.
You know, if you're developing your own signature scent really intrigues me, because I suppose we know that smell is very evocative, and I imagine when people walk into the studio, it's Pilates time. I can smell it. I can breathe it. What does it smell like?
Okay, so I bought a whole heap of scents that I like from an essential oil wholesaler, and kind of mixed my own. But it is orange sweet, dark patchouli, lemon myrtle, eucalyptus, and cinnamon bark. So it's got a very Australian, it's like fresh, it's kind of invigorating. So yeah, we have the essential oil in a diffuser at the studio, and then making the candles was kind of like the next step. And it was really lovely. It was so lovely to send people or send our community members the candles, and they're like, oh, it feels like the studio. It's so nice, you know, to have a little bit of it home. And yeah, it's really special.
Was that difficult, the COVID time? How did you manage that?
It was difficult. It was difficult, like professionally and personally, because I thrive so much on community and connection with people. And I'd, you know, done so much work in building a community. But I learned a lot of really great lessons about myself and about my team. But yeah, not having that face-to-face connection with our community was tough, but we pivoted really quickly. I do a lot of R&D on what other studios are doing. So that Sunday when it was looking like we were going to get shut down in the next couple of days, I went onto the MindBody app and was having a look at what all the studios in New York and London were doing. And I noticed that one of them had just moved to live classes. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. That's what we're going to do. Because there was that week or so where we just had no idea what was going to happen. No, there was no like path that made total sense. So we did it quickly, and we were kind of one of the first to market with the live classes in Melbourne. And I just made it happen. A lot of YouTubing of how the hell to make classes high quality. And so Zoom, we were doing it from my phone originally. The second lockdown was probably more stressful when everybody was working from home. So the first lockdown, the staff could still come to the studio and they still felt like they were going to work and they had purpose and it was meaningful for them. Whereas when they were at home, the last month or two just got really, really tough, as it did for, I think, all Melburnians. I kind of took solace in the fact that I had this community to kind of corral, and that really helped me get through.
Initially, Kat, was it just yourself managing the business and running classes, or did you have other staff members starting straight away?
So we started off with, I think it was two other teachers, potentially three, and myself, because I knew I couldn't physically, like I would burn out. And I probably did burn out within the first 6 months. Yeah, I was teaching a lot and managing the studio, working on the business and in the business, managing all of the customer service, doing all the cleaning, doing all the managing of, you know, emails and MindBody is our booking system. So yeah, it was a lot. I was doing a lot and I really did burn myself into the ground. But I'm really lucky that my partner actually used to own a business. So he had a lot of good advice, and he used to own a bar, which is kind of similar in that you work in it, you work on it, you do all the admin. So he had a lot of good advice. He was like, just get a cleaner. Get a cleaner. Don't worry about it. Like, you know, that was one of the best pieces of advice he had. But yes, I was doing a lot. And I think it probably took about 6 months to a year to get into a bit more of a rhythm.
And how do you find people that align with your vision? As you say, you've got this no BS policy. You want it to be very inclusive. That's really important to you. So how do you find people who are the right fit for Good Times Pilates?
I'm really lucky in that where I studied my certificate and my diploma, Breathe Education, I've kind of been affiliated with them. I did for a time start the process of being a teacher trainer and then decided that I wanted to open the studio, so I couldn't do both. So in being affiliated with them and understanding the way that they teach, because I've learnt from them, I knew that I had a huge pool of teachers that kind of understood where I was coming from and were willing to learn. And also for the 3 years that I was working full-time in the industry, I taught at like 10 different studios over that time. So I made a lot of connections through teachers and going to classes and studio owners. So I had kind of hired my friends and they know me well enough to know my dream, and they get the dream. But it is a learning curve. Like I have a lot of documents, like brand documents and language documents, so that they can kind of go back and refresh. We're always learning to be better and to be more inclusive and to think critically of the things that we say. So we're all on this kind of journey together.
How long did it take for the business to pick up interest and even to book out classes?
That first 6 months is such a blur.
You were doing too much cleaning, Kat, that's why.
I know. So I think we started off with maybe 7 classes a day or 6 classes a day. Like it wasn't heaps, but it was enough to offer, you know, the people that could come at different times an option. And then within the 6 months, I think it really started building up is when I hired more people. We added more classes. And then I think potentially a year is when it really started to get kicking. I changed our pricing structure as well, which really helped increase revenue. I started using Xero, so our accounting software, which just saves my brain and just automates everything. It makes payroll so simple. Even doing JobKeeper, you can do it through Xero. So it's really easy. It does all super. So in automating things, I was allowed to then focus on building the business a bit more. And I think it probably took us about a year to get really kicking. Yeah, I remember last year was the year that was like, oh, wow, this is really doing its thing. I went to the States for 3 weeks and had no qualms leaving the business. And, yeah, it was actually really empowering to go, oh, it was empowering, but also like I was almost offended, like, oh, it can just run without me. Like I don't need to be here.
This podcast is brought to you by Business Australia. Join Business Australia as a free member to access advice, tools, and documents to help you be better at business. Visit businessaustralia.com to find out more.
When you go offshore and you check out Pilates studios, I'm assuming you had a sticky beak, Kat. You probably couldn't help yourself. What sort of things did you learn about how other markets go about presenting their businesses?
I learned that sometimes your Instagram presence or your social media presence, your website doesn't always speak to the experience in studio, and there can be quite a disconnect there, like both in positive and negative ways. So that was a good lesson in that I then kind of took that onto wanting our Instagram to feel a bit more community focused and organic.
Tell me more about developing your online presence. What did it take to do that? How did you get people worded up about this new platform?
We started doing live classes pretty much straight away. We turned that around in about 48 hours. I started with a free first day. We were doing 3 classes a day, and we did that for the first lockdown. And it allowed our community, who are locals, to remain connected to us, but it also allowed us to expand internationally and all over the country. We had people from Singapore, people from London, Dublin, Bali, lots of people from New York and Austin. I mean, I'm not totally sure exactly how they found us. I'm assuming it's social media. But yeah, that was really cool. And so after the first 3 months of lockdown and realizing, oh, actually, this thing kind of has legs. Like we could make this a kind of parallel business and offering and expand our community kind of exponentially. So the first lockdown was when I decided we were going to remain online, and we started our first round of filming for Good Times Online. And it did take me a long time. I was definitely going through the struggle of the second lockdown when I launched Good Times Online. So in doing that, we're now allowed to expand our community. But social media advertising has been a really great help with expanding that community, and also some outreach to influencers. And now Good Times Online, is still going, and it's going to continue to go, and it's going really well.
You mentioned there about social media advertising. Who was giving you advice on what to do on that front?
One of my good friends is in media strategy. So she helped me out. For the launch of Good Times Online, we did a whole campaign. We had someone doing the graphics, the actual plan, the strategy, and then someone doing the advertising through social media and doing all the campaign, making sure everything was set up right. Because I've done that stuff before myself, but I really don't know if I'm doing it right. especially with Facebook advertising, a lot of the things change quite rapidly. And so you think you know how to do something and then you'll go in and it'll change. And so, yeah, I outsource as much as possible. And I think that this year has been the year where I've really learned to outsource. I love doing everything myself because I love learning about new things and knowing how things work. But you have to protect your energy. And if outsourcing is going to do that, then just do it.
How are your parents reacting to how things have gone for you?
I think when they first were like, oh yeah, open a business, it's a great idea, I don't think they thought that it would be what it is and like be this community and be this, like, I say the word success, it's kind of subjective, but for me it's a big successful business. And yeah, I don't think that they also, when I'm like, I'm going on holidays for 3 weeks, like, what do you mean? You can't go on holiday, you own a business. But for me, that's also the point of owning my own business, is that I kind of work myself out of the day-to-day so I can run it, you know, from a zoom out and run it from the outside perspective. But yeah, they are very proud. And yeah, I lived at home for the first month or so when the studio opened. And so they were very involved. But now I don't involve them as much for my own kind of mental health.
This podcast is brought to you by Business Australia.
What's changed within the business since you started Good Times Pilates? I imagine a lot.
A lot. I feel like our message makes a lot more sense now. It's more organic because we all live and breathe it. Whereas in the beginning, my mantra was like, we strive to be like this, but now it's we are this. We actually are inclusive and we do make people feel good. What's changed for me is that I feel like I have grown into a better manager of people. That definitely wasn't a skill that I had prior, all of my prior work experience. Like, I'd been a studio manager, but I haven't been like a team manager or a team leader. Mm-hmm. And so I've definitely grown my skills within that, and being able to give feedback to people who are in your team and have them learn from that and take it on board. We launched the second business, the online business. So that's pretty big.
And Kat, given the expertise, the experience that you've gained since starting the business, if you could rewind and go back and have a little conversation to yourself when you were starting out, what sort of advice would you be giving yourself?
It would definitely be to get zero sooner. Zero kind of saved me in terms of doing payroll, doing super, all of your expenses. Like, I don't even remember how I was doing my expenses before. Accounting software is definitely what I would tell myself to do before and learn how to work it.
So for other creatives like you who, you know, you've confessed that you find some of the admin stuff a bit boring, any advice there? It sounds like it is doable if you have the right resources and tools.
Yeah, I think so. Like, it takes a little bit of kind of hard work, in that if you don't love something, the work is always a little bit harder. But then when you can set yourself up and automate processes, you save yourself so much time and energy. It's work at the start, but it's worthwhile in the end. Like, if you think about the long game, think about the sustainability of your energy and your business, then it's definitely worthwhile to put in the energy at the start.
Apart from that accounting software, are there any other resources you've utilized along the way that's made life a bit easier?
Getting a cleaner, like I said before, definitely makes life easier. I mean, we still vacuum every day, but I was the one doing it. Also, I didn't really ask for help. I didn't ask for as much help from the staff, from the teachers. And, you know, it takes 5 minutes to vacuum after they teach. And if I'd just asked them to do that, they probably would have. And then they did eventually and it was fine. So I think, yeah, learning to lean on other people or just to ask for help.
And what gave you a nudge in that direction to be able to stump up, approach a teacher and say, oh, look, as part of your routine, you just have to, you know, give the floors a little vacuum at the end of the session?
Oh, I don't know. I think it was probably exhaustion.
So sharing the load's really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm very lucky that our team are really supportive, and they do want to help, because they know that it's not, doing those jobs aren't just to help me as well. They're to help the whole community. They really thrive on being more of a part of it.
And we know that a lot of women, for all sorts of different reasons, are motivated to start their own businesses. Do you have any advice for any other ladies looking to start their own enterprise?
I'm part of a few business Facebook groups, and I actually was part of creating one for my industry. So I didn't create it, but I was like one of the first people into it. So just asking questions, like asking everybody, connecting with other people who are doing something that's similar to yours. I think what I would like to see in kind of the wider business landscape is moving away from other businesses being a threat and meeting the owners.
But I suppose other businesses in a similar industry are quite rightly protective of what's worked for them. Do you find that people are generous with their advice?
Usually, yes. I understand why you would be protective. It makes total sense. But, you know, I'm still of the mindset that we all rise by lifting each other up. And what's it to you to give advice if you know your business and you know your community and you know your point of difference? Then, you know, offering a tiny bit of advice and assistance to someone who is asking for it isn't going to hinder any of that.
So what's next, Kat? What's on the horizon for Good Times Pilates?
Find a bigger space for the studio. So at the moment we're, you know, 100 square meters. We have 10 reformers. So I would really love to expand our physical space to be able to build our community and also offer all the mat Pilates that everybody loves now, because they were doing it for the last like 8 months. So yeah, that is my plan for the next kind of 6 months or so. And also going through COVID, it's like having the government mandate that your business shut down is probably as worse as it's going to get, or like, you know, or one of the worst things that could potentially happen to you. So I have like a renewed sense of energy, and like I feel like Teflon, you know, like I could just do it, because why not?
What a wonderful note to end on. Kat Webb from Good Times Pilates, thank you so much for taking us through our paces. It's been an absolute joy having you on The Company You Keep.
Thank you so much, Janice. It was so lovely to speak with you.
Kat Webb from Good Times Pilates, breaking down fitness stereotypes and having a lot of fun in the process. Her lack of skin in the game is actually an asset. She says she has fresh eyes on what her kind of customer wants from fitness. She rides shotgun with her members to embolden them while turning her back on an overbearing, gung-ho approach. A very deliberate use of inclusive language helps members feel comfortable, engaged, and curious. As Kat says, you need to feel fearless to give things a crack. And she's carried that philosophy into the virtual world too. So whether it be a traditional studio class, Zoom lesson, or even an Instagram post, there's always a healthy dose of that trademark, no BS, good times cheer. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Company You Keep, brought to you by Business Australia. Don't forget to subscribe on your favourite podcast app.